The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Sunday special podcast coming right at you. Hello. Welcome back to Ion College Basketball. If you're watching live, thank you on a Sunday afternoon in late July. We appreciate you. That is Adam Finkelstein. If you're listening to the podcast, you'll hear him momentarily. I, of course, am Matt Norlander. Gary Parrish, where is he? Well, GP actually had some CBS Sports Network duty in New York City. And since this podcast is going to be a recruiting special, I've been on the road. Finkelstein obviously has been as well. Wanted to bring in, you know, an actual expert. As fun as it would be to do a 7-minute podcast with Parrish talking about guys he didn't see in person, Adam, we're going to dodge that entirely. Thanks for joining me, man. How you doing?
I'm great, thanks. I think it's admirable that you guys don't, you know, most guys in the national college basketball media come to Peach Jam for about 36 hours and say they're experts at the end of it. So I celebrate your choices here.
I actually was at the, now normally, I'm normally at Peach Jam for about 4 days, but okay. This year I actually was at Peach Jam for about 36 hours. That's for a different story. That's a teaser. I won't reveal what that is. You'll see it on the site later this week. We're going to start this podcast. We're going to talk about a ton here. If you're interested in Gigi Jackson, DJ Wagner, Mo Can Elite won the actual Peach Jam. If you're curious about guys at the top in 23, maybe a couple of good 24 guys, and yes, even a couple of 25 guys, we're going to try and hit on a lot of national themes here, a lot of programs to get covered, a lot of players to know about. Adam's going to tell you all you need to know, but we actually kind of unexpectedly need to start this episode with news that I broke minutes before we went live here. And this had been gaining a little bit of steam, you know, at these events. Bill Self, coach of the Kansas Jayhawks, and his assistant, Curtis Townsend, they were taken off of the road for the live July period, for the entire month. To be clear here, some coaches, when I first got tipped to this, some coaches believe it was spring and summer. I can't actually confirm that it was definitely spring. There's a potential for that as well, but they were 100% off the road for the live July period. This obviously stems back to the years-long NCAA case. If you're listening to this podcast and getting to it late Sunday or Monday, Nada, let's just make sure we put that news or that headline in the pod description on YouTube and in the pod, be it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, et cetera. You can go read it there. Just a quick headline there. But this is significant. It's Bill Self, one of the best recruiters of the past 2 decades, coming off a national championship and not being able to be on the road at these events. There's more to the recruiting than just showing up and being at the games, as Adam can and will attest to. But still, I mean, let me just put it to you this way, Adam. Significant that Self, and that's two of the four that coaches can have, programs can have four guys on the road, a head and usually three assistants, but you get four people across the country. They were down two of these guys in July. From a practical standpoint, in your opinion, Adam, how impactful is this for Kansas to not have Self be able to see these games? And oh, by the way, it's to be determined whether or not Self can even, now maybe, I want to be clear on this before I tee you up. Maybe Self and Townsend can be texting these guys, but some schools in the past have actually put an outright ban. No contact period. You can't be on the road. And if you're on this suspension, if you will, you can't contact recruits. So we don't know if that's the case with Bill Self, but be it if it's not, or if it is, just not being at the games to be able to say you were there, your head coach, Adam, how damaging is or isn't this for a program like Kansas as its case continues to go without near resolution here?
You know, coming off a national championship, I don't think this is all that damaging to Kansas. And what I would offer as proof to that is the fact that no one even recognized it until the last day of the recruiting period. You just broke the news about 20 minutes before the final game of the summer ended. And the reason why that's relevant is because you can usually tell a school's recruiting priorities based on the locations of a head coach. And the schools in which Kansas is recruiting against was no doubt making that point. You know, you're going up, whoever it is you're recruiting, If they're recruiting against somebody else, that other school saying, hey, where's Coach Self? We've got our head coach here. So the fact that it didn't come to the forefront of people's attention until the final day of the period is to me indicative of the fact that, hey, this isn't necessarily as big of a deal as we think. As you mentioned, this is rooted all the way back in the FBI case of years ago. In my mind, Kansas has already gotten over kind of the negative impact that that case had in their recruiting. We saw them just deliver a monster recruiting class last year. So when you're riding that type of wave of momentum, both a star-studded incoming recruiting class as well as a national championship, the fact that Bill Self isn't on the road in July, in my mind, is not that big of a deal long-term.
And getting feedback from a few coaches, some echoed that exact thing. Some thought it was notable, and I would agree with this take, in that Kansas privately has been fighting tooth and nail pretty much almost every single allegation in detail in the notice of allegations from the NCAA and from the IARP, and trying to hope that they can win out with its lawyers and beat this process, even though there are five level one allegations against Kansas. That includes a lack of institutional control, which has been a biggie in years past in terms of a postseason ban. Bill Self has a coach control charge. I'm not going to completely run down the history of this Kansas case. In fact, if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, we have talked about the Jayhawks and this specifically, so you're more than likely familiar with it. Whether it affects how good Kansas's recruiting class will be is interesting. There has been a precedent in years past with Blue Bloods. North Carolina obviously comes to mind. The cases were not remotely the same, but Carolina was caught in the muck for years and years and years with the academic case. It did. Roy Williams talked about it on the record. It did have an impact on their recruiting. With Kansas, this has been going on and on, but this is the first indication of compliance on behalf of half of Kansas with the NCAA and the IARP, Adam. You know,
and I think it did impact Kansas in recruiting without question initially. In fact, you could almost argue the fact that the team they just won the national championship with, they got multi-year players because of the fact that they couldn't get kind of the one and done or two and done type prospects that they were getting before the case happened. So I do think it impacted them in recruitment. As to, you know, kind of the other variables in terms of what it might mean for their case, I'm admittedly not the expert on that. But in terms of what it means for the recruits who are contemplating their move, and is Kansas any less appealing because Bill Self is in front and center, I don't believe that to be the case.
Yeah, and you would know that as well, really, as anyone there. What we don't know is how long this is going to last. Will this be just a thing that ends in July? Coaches can go again in about mid-September to see recruits in person, see them at their high schools or at their prep schools. There's no game action again, basically, until November. Right. And the key component here, again, is whether or not, recruits like to have communication with some coaches, whether or not that's just some of the staff or the entire staff remains to be seen. But it is a new spec. Go ahead, Adam.
And I think that's far more important. They need to be able to talk and communicate to the head coach. They don't necessarily need to see him sitting front row, because if they can communicate with him, he's sitting here watching the stream just like everybody else and providing feedback, and they're in constant communication. It's really not a big deal. If they can't talk to the head coach, at that point, I think it becomes a potential obstacle.
As if anyone's listening wondering, well, when's this Kansas case going to get resolved? That remains to be seen. I have been told by sources and that got reiterated to me today. Bill Self and Kansas have not gone in front of the fire, if you will, and had their major hearing that they're waiting for. Like, I don't know if this has been reported or not, but Penny Hardaway in Memphis, they already did that. That they've already had their hearing. So the Memphis, which is not FBI related, the James Wiseman thing, Memphis is on a track to be resolved before Kansas. That's been the case the whole time. Arizona still has months to go. LSU still has months to go. The hope, I think, with Kansas was that this would be resolved by the time the season started. I guess there's still a window for that, but they have not gone and faced the jury here and had Self sit down in Indianapolis. We wait and see when that happens. All right, that's the news peg. Let's go big picture here. Our annual Peach Jam special, that's going to be, frankly, the best one yet. All right, so MOCAN, coincidentally enough, a program that obviously Kansas is quite connected to. MOCAN, short for Hello, Missouri, Kansas. They win Peach Jam. We'll get to that in a second. I feel like there are actually multiple news pegs coming out of Peach Jam, Adam.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
I think we have to start with GG Jackson only because, now, it was expected. He was going to reclassify, and then he was going to commit to South Carolina. So we can take this a number of ways. I'm going to let – the floor is yours, my man. But what – let me cue you up this way. One, GG Jackson reclassifying. Is he still in your mind now the number one player in 22? And two, for South Carolina fans that are juiced about this, big picture, how impactful do you think he's going to be with the Gamecocks this season? I say that because in talking to a few coaches, some of the feedback I got was interesting talent, but some coaches who saw him aren't even convinced that he's going to be like a top 25 level player in college next season. But do you disagree with that assessment from some coaches who saw him in person?
Well, there's two levels to this evaluation in my mind. There is how he projects at the college level and then how he projects at the NBA level, because with this move, he's now eligible for the 2023 NBA draft. So we'll start with college. You asked the question, is he the top ranked prospect in the class of 2022? The answer to that is no. Nick Smith, who's going to Arkansas, will maintain that spot. Frankly, I don't think he's number two either. I think that that goes to Derek Lively, who's going to Duke. The 2023 recruiting class, even with the amount of players that it lost, whether through overtime elite, G League, or reclassifying to 2001, is still a much better group than the class of 2023 from top to bottom. The reason why that's important is because it speaks to the caliber of the subsequent draft. So G.G. Jackson, while he would have been, remained the top-ranked prospect in the high school senior class of 2023, as a college freshman, he's you know, top five, maybe top 10, but not number one. And he is an interesting talent. He is a guy who is certainly provides. And listen, let's start with this. For Lamont Paris, home run, obviously. I believe this was the initial plan with Frank Martin. When Frank Martin was the head coach at South Carolina, it had been widely speculated that G.G. Jackson would commit there, would end up reclassifying and ending up there as soon as this, potentially even earlier than he did now. So this, I believe, was the initial plan. There was some speculation that he always wanted to go to North Carolina. I think there was a little bit of a divided house in terms of his parents and where they wanted him. But when Frank Martin gets fired, it opens things back up, because they had been very clear with that administration that Frank Martin was their guy. So Frank Martin gets fired anyway. And at that point, that's where North Carolina becomes the option. Obviously, Lamont Paris comes in. They continue to work that. They flip the commitment. And the fact that he becomes draft eligible a year earlier is significant, because at North Carolina, the roster is much better. They don't have the immediate opportunity for GG to go in and make the splash that he can now theoretically make at South Carolina. The question is, and you alluded to this, what is he capable of doing year one for a first-year head coach on a roster that is not considered to be in the top half of the SEC? For me, that is a fair question. I think offensively, he's a guy that right now really wants to stretch his game to the perimeter. He calls himself, you know, he's a four who wants to be a three, who's actually closer to a five in my mind. He's at his best around the rim, where his physical tools can really shine, but he shows potential putting the ball on the floor and long-term as a shooter. That's going to be more important, I think, when you start to project him out to the NBA. But what he's not is a polished shot creator or someone you can build your half-court offense around next year, to the point many of the coaches you talked to were making. So, and then from an NBA standard, you project him out and you say, okay, we think he's going to be able to shoot. We think he's going to be able to put the ball on the floor a couple of times. But is he as versatile defensively as we want him to be? And that's been the concern that I've heard the most from NBA scouts, because those have been the people I've been talking to most. And they said, you know, they list him at 6'9". He may be 6'8". In our world, he's closer to a five. And yeah, that prototype, there's just not a high demand for right now. So we need to see how mobile and how switchable he is next year at South Carolina. So to summarize, I think he certainly makes an impact at South Carolina. It's a great boost of momentum, but this is not a plan that is without risk. He's going to have all eyeballs on him. NBA scouts are going to be watching his every move. Local South Carolina fans are going to be watching his every move. There is going to be a lot of pressure on a young freshman who's coming in without having the benefit of summer session and really going to be looked on as a bit of a savior. And I'm not sure he's quite ready for all that.
You're hitting on so many themes that I've heard from coaches. First of all, I'm an absolute height truther with G.G. Jackson. He ain't 6'9". He's not. Like, and whatever. Just he's 6'8". If he was like 6'7" and three quarters, I'd believe it. But they're as you well know, like NBA people, they care about that stuff a ton. He's not that big. The shot creation, it's like blatantly obvious when you see him and when you see him in person. I did get to see him in person at Peach Jam. He had a showcase game against the New Jersey Scholars that CP3 won. But a coach was telling me, that they're rooting for him to do well, but for both him and Lamont, this concoction has so much potential downside to it in terms of you're going to bring this guy in. Lamont's been with the rest of the team. Like maybe they had designs on getting him and all that stuff, but you're going to, you know, how quickly will the chemistry work? How much should be on Gigi Jackson's shoulders? He's a local product. It's South Carolina basketball. What should be the level of expectation there? Yeah, if you're a South Carolina fan, you should be extremely excited that this guy's coming. But I just had a few coaches, because what I try and do is the coaches that have seen him play like you in person way more times than I, just give me a feel of like what you see with this guy. And I even had one coach tell me he doesn't even see him as a one and done talent. Like he thinks that he's going to get to college and actually prove to be like kind of maybe he'll go after the first year, Adam, and be like the 21st pick or whatever. But really, in terms of him blooming to where he could go to the NBA and have more immediate impact, one coach who's power conference coach was saying he wouldn't be surprised to see if it took Jackson 2 years.
Well, that to me is the other variable that's really interesting because, as I alluded to, the 2023 NBA draft, this is next June, is projected to be a really good one. So rushing, you know, kind of rushing to the money, which we've seen a lot of kids, like Jalen Duren and Amani Bates did this exact same thing last summer. They played Peach Jam and then they said, hey, I'm going to college, in Jalen Duren's case, so I can get to the draft as far as I can. I even think Amani Bates, perhaps foolishly, I think his camp thought they were going to be able to get to the draft, even though he wasn't age eligible, but they thought somehow they were going to be able to get some sort of exception. So this is not abnormal. Jonathan Kuminga did the same thing. There's a long list. But the 2023 draft is a very good one right now. 2024, which equates to this current high school year that Gigi Jackson just left, that's one where we can't figure out who the new number one is. I know we're going to get into that later, yeah. But like that's a draft that you know, if I were in charge of a prospect or advising a prospect, I'd say, hey, you got a lot more upside in that one. A lot of chance to go higher in the draft. And given the state of NIL right now, maybe we can bridge this gap, keep you in high school for a year. Because here's the other thing, Matt. Kids are getting NIL to stay in high school. So, you know, you can, you know, there were ways to kind of, in years past, it's as I said, a run to the money. But I do think there was kind of a strategy on the board that could have showcased his abilities and protected him a little bit more. I mean, he is fully exposed in this year at South Carolina. I'm not saying he's not going to do well. I'm just saying we're going to find out because this is not a situation that is tailor-made to protect him.
By the way, if you are listening to this podcast and are like, what's up with New Orleans Audio, I'm still on the road. I will be traveling back home soon. So that's just a quick explainer. Normally my audio is a little bit better. Let's talk number one players real quick. And if you want, let's go 23 class and 24 class. 23, DJ Wagner is number one in the composite, I believe. But there's a couple of viable options, including one of Wagner's teammates. For you personally, where is your opinion on this, and did it shift? Or are you sticking with what it was, say, going into July? Who should be the number one player in the 23 class?
I would tell you that in, you know, 12 years of doing this at ESPN prior to joining 24/7 and CBS in April, this is the hardest year that I ever had in terms of figuring out who is the top guy. Because DJ Wagner would have had the best case coming into the month, if for no other reason that he has the best resume to date. So depending on what you're basing your rankings on, if you're basing it on who's the best player right now, DJ Wagner, he's done the most over the course of his high school career. But just to call a spade, he did not have a great month. He really struggled at the Peach Jam. Yeah. He didn't have a great showing with USA Basketball, even though they won a gold medal in Spain in the weeks before that. So he had a chance to really secure this spot, and he didn't do it. I mean, that game you talked about with Scholars and CP3, even though it was packed with coaches and fans, it was a consolation game. They were already out. Neither one of those teams, who were both among the most talented in the EYBL, even won their pool. So, you know, DJ Wagner, you know, he may still end up number one. He's certainly in the conversation, but he didn't seize that spot. Xavier Booker's a prospect who actually plays on an independent team. So he was not at the Peach Jam. He's one of the most naturally talented guys in the class. So if you're betting on upside, maybe you're thinking about him. But in terms of production right now, he's not it. Justin Edwards, a guy who's scheduled to commit tomorrow at CBS HQ. you know, up and down. There's just not a definitive number one right now. No one has seized the spot. So to be totally transparent about my process, I came out of Peach Jam unsure of who's going to be number one, and intent to do a deep dive in the days to come, really digging into all their game film, doing my due diligence behind the scenes and trying to see who projects out best, because no one has seized that spot in 2023. And to be honest with you, 2024 is the same story. Trey Johnson, Ian Jackson, guys like that who are making a case. The most star-studded class we have right now is 2025. And those are 15-year-olds. And I think that's why you saw so many people, national media like yourself, who go to the Peach Jam, who start tweeting about 15-year-olds, because 2023 and 2024 just don't have the star power that we are accustomed to seeing. A lot of that is because kids have departed, whether it's G League Ignite or Overtime Elite. But this is just, as of yet, we don't have the same star power in these classes that we are accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, real quick for me on Wagner, I loved him last year. Yes, and I actually still think that he has such tempting and fun. And this is all relative. We're talking about literally who is going to be the number one player in high school basketball. Okay, so DJ Wagner does not suck, but he has had a rough stretch here. Talked to multiple coaches who saw him in Team USA, and his shot was not falling. That kind of continued here at Peach Jam. And if you are someone who thought, you know, Wagner is more suited to be slotted, say 4, 5, 6, 7, that's where he's currently or how he projects, sometimes these projections obviously want to reflect well once these guys get into the NBA. I can understand that. I would still bet on Wagner, but it's undeniable that he hit a swoon here that was a little bit unexpected. We'll see if he can get it back together. Since he is such a big name, I'll put you on the spot real quick. And for people that might not be aware of where you may or may not be leaning with this, even if you think it's a toss-up, DJ Wagner eventually is playing in a college uniform at which university, Adam? Because that's another one where, like, college coaches, like, they're just bringing up these conversations. They ask me, right, well, where's Wagner going to play? Man, I don't know. Like, I'm happy to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What
I would say right now is that the intel sounds more Kentucky-ish, but obviously his grandfather is now on staff at Louisville. So this one is not over until it's over. Aaron Bradshaw, who is his teammate at Camden High School and also with New Jersey Scholars, their recruitment seems intertwined, but perhaps in a opposite sort of way. You know, it's very conceivable that one ends up at Louisville and one ends up at Kentucky. If I had to guess today, I would say Kentucky is the favorite, but I think it's a long way from over. And just a quick response to your point about the rankings. For me, like, rankings isn't necessarily about who's the best player right now. But in my mind, it's more about projecting a futures market, who's the best long-term prospect at the top of the class, because you don't want to have there's a big difference between who's the best high school player, who's the best college player, who's the best NBA prospect. And I think at the top of the class, you've got to do your best to account for that.
Good stuff. All right, we still got plenty more to get to here. I'm going to take a quick break, but after the break, you know, we have to talk about it. We are going to get to Bronny James, who had among the best weeks of anyone down at Peach Jam and anywhere across the country. We'll get to that. Plus, you heard Adam mention the 2025 guys. We're going to talk about that. There's a player named TJ Power you need to know, and other big takeaways from the rest of the week in July in recruiting. But first, a word from our sponsors. Fired up, Nada.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, let's talk Bronny James here. Now, he had a legitimately very, very good process, right? So Adam's going to lay out what you need to know about this. But let me vamp for a couple quick seconds on this, because I actually, with what I was doing reporting, I was hoping that I would get to see Bronny James in person, but I was bouncing around the country. I never saw one of his games in person. What I've come to learn in talking to some folks here is that from a recruitment standpoint, obviously, it's a different kind of. Now, there's a question whether he'll play in college or not. But the feedback I've received from a few different sources in the past couple of days is obviously the family is going to run this as much as the family has literally ever run any recruitment. We get that. That goes without saying. And Adam, the six schools I got told, and maybe there's more, and maybe the realist is fewer than this, but there are six schools that are kind of attached to this right now. I got USC, UCLA, Michigan, Ohio State, Memphis, and then Duke, although I was told that never count out Duke, but Duke with K versus Duke without K, that's almost like Duke by default inclusion. But again, never discount Duke. There could be more. There could be fewer. Those are the six that I were told if Bronny James is ultimately going to go to college. It seems like that's the grouping right now. Would you agree, disagree, if you've got a school to for sure put in there?
You know, ironically, and I'm not going to say which one, but I spoke to one of the schools on this list and asked that question. I said, are you guys involved there? And the question, the answer I got was no. So I think that there's just a lot of questions about Bronny James right now. You're starting to hear more college talk. That I will say. There was a big assumption that he was just never going to play college basketball. And a large part of that stems from the fact that LeBron very publicly on more than one occasion has said that his last season in the NBA will be, with his son. Of course, there's a rule similar. We just talked about Gigi. He's got to be a year removed from high school. So whether he does a post-grad year, like you saw Dwayne Wade's son do a couple of years ago before he went to the G League, in this case with Utah's G League team, that's where Dwayne Wade's son went. We don't know exactly what he will do with that year. I don't know of any colleges that are actively recruiting him at this moment. I know of some that have reached out and been told that he's not interested through a third party. But it is, there is, in my mind, no really good information here about what he's going to do, and a ton of speculation. So John Shire did watch one of his games. I can confirm that. I was at that game. But Cody Williams was also on the floor in that game, too. So people were saying, I saw the tweets, Penny Hardaway and John Shire watch Bronny James. And I kind of went like, yeah, they watched Cody Williams, too. So who knows, which one that really was. So
hey, if I can interject real quick for people that aren't familiar with Cody Williams, who's the better player, in your opinion, Bronny James or Cody Williams, for people that don't even know who Cody Williams is?
Cody Williams.
OK. All right. Continue.
Yeah, Cody Williams. Yep. Cody Williams is one of the best long-term prospects in the class. I mean, he's a guy that is closer to potential than he is production right now. But he's the younger brother of Jalen Williams, who just got drafted out of Santa Clara. So he's a terrific prospect. So yeah, I don't think anybody knows exactly what Bronny's plan is. What I will say is that in terms of his game, we saw a clear escalation this week at the Peach Jam. Now, they were playing in what's called the PIT, which is basically the equivalent of the NIT. His Strive for Greatness squad did not qualify for the championship bracket at the Peach Jam. They didn't have a very good regular season. So they were essentially playing in this B bracket all week long. Now, with less at stake, he did put up numbers, albeit not overly consistently, but we saw a more aggressive version of Bronny James. He's always been able to shoot the ball, but we saw him kind of take over as the primary playmaker more often than not. He was able to get downhill in the open floor. He was shooting the ball well from the three-point line. As I mentioned, he's got terrific touch and layup-making ability at the rim. What's obvious is he does not have his father's size, and although he is a plus athlete, he's not an absolutely amazingly elite athlete. So, there's some things there. But he was as good and as aggressive as I have seen him this week.
Is he a top 40 player in his class now after what he did?
Yeah, I think so. I would, you know, want to go back and look at it. And again, context is important. Would he have been a top 40 prospect a year ago or 2 years ago? Maybe not. But in this class, I think he's got a good chance.
Okay. And a reminder, this class is definitely down. That's another running trope I heard. I mean, I heard that every other game I sat at over the past 5 days, Adam, is just how down, yeah. 23 is in general. All right, let's 100%. Talk about the player. TJ Power, big rise. Before I continue, yes or no, did any player improve their stock more in the month of July than TJ Power?
Well, you should probably ask somebody who hasn't seen TJ since he was 15 years old. So here's the thing with TJ. He's finally healthy. TJ has whether – and he's – I will say this. He's available. Whether it was because of his baseball career, you know, he's a left-handed pitcher who throws in the upper 80s. He shoots a basketball right-handed. So he has spent a lot of time playing baseball over the years. He's had a few nagging injuries. Now that he's finally healthy and he's been healthy for the better part of the last 6 months, his recruitment is going to the levels where, you know, quite frankly, we and I admittedly initially expected it to go. But he's older. He's turns 19 this month, which makes him a year and a half, maybe 2 years older than some of the prospects in this class. So he is more polished and more ready to impact the game. So he certainly helped himself, and he's got a wide range of recruitment, including the Blue Bloods right now. But he's got to decide, does he want to go that Blue Blood route, or does he want to go someplace where he's being recruited to be more of a focal point?
It's going to be interesting. So a couple notes from me on TJ Power. 6'8 forward from Massachusetts. He's 65 in the composite at 247 as we speak. After all the buzz, I guess it wouldn't be stunning to see him jump into the top 25 whenever the rankings refresh, just based off of, like, again, the buzz. Now, it was Iowa, Notre Dame, Boston College, Virginia that were in on him. He's taking official visits. Again, like he's going to North Carolina Monday. He's going to Duke on Tuesday. So when you talk about if he's going to, like, when you go to those schools and take those official visits, it's so easy to be wowed by that kind of stuff. And if you're a school, like, I don't know how long Boston College has been recruiting him, Adam, given where he's from.
There's some deep family ties there as well. In fact, okay. And you know what, like starting the month, the very first day of the live period, I was in Atlanta. And I walked into the Under Armour Association and someone almost tackled me. There was a big rumor that TJ Power had just committed to Boston College and he was having the graphic made, to the point where I'm texting, you know, various people and I'm saying, like, hey, is this about to happen? And obviously, you know, Boston College would love that, because while he was a priority for them then, he's undoubtedly even more of one now. But I do think TJ is, and he's also got Kansas, you know, yes. I mean, ironically. Yeah,
there are more, but I'm just saying, like, immediately as we record the Sunday night, like, he's literally going to the triangle in the next, you know, 72 hours. That's just.
Yep.
I love how, like, it's like, is the graphic getting made? The ever critical Photoshop. But you're right. Like, you know, stuff like this can get crazy. And from my perspective, Adam, TJ Power seems to be as big of a riser as anyone throughout the month of July, whether that's true or not. I don't know. Perception-wise, he's taken a big jump. I was actually unaware of his age. Certainly, that's a factor as well with his development there. Can we talk a couple of the younger guys? You mentioned class of 2025.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So Cooper Flagg, Cameron Boozer. Cooper Flagg. I'm loving the fact, and we're going to get to another guy from Maine that I saw in person out in Chicago. But Cooper Flagg, like, the pride of Maine. We've got dudes from Maine. There's a guy from, like, Idaho that's going to go play at Virginia. I love the fact that these players that are just from these uncommon places are suddenly, like, becoming, like, major Division I talents. But yes, there is a storyline developing here that 23 is down, 24 is down, 2025 might be the best in terms of top end talent there. So we are going to have chances to see these guys, rising sophomores, if you will, in the years to come before they even step on college campus, or who knows what the NBA rule will be like by the time they're actually done high school. Like, there's a chance Cooper Flagg, when he's done high school, will be able to be drafted immediately into the NBA, depending on what the Players Association and the NBA agree to in their next collective bargaining agreement in the next couple of years. That aside, Adam, what do people need to know about Flagg and Boozer? Those seem like the two biggest names, but if there's another, you know, third or fourth to know, lay it on us.
Well, I think this is the thing. What you said is absolutely true. 23 is down, 24 is down. People are looking for something to be excited about. And so 2025 provided that at the Peach Jam. But what I would offer, and I'm actually have a piece coming out on this tomorrow, is just some patience. Because if we've learned anything in the grassroots basketball community in recent years, it is the fact that we can do a whole lot more harm than good by throwing these early labels on these kids. And some of the stuff that came out this week was totally irresponsible by adults who are either, you know, like trying to trade compliments for access to these 15-year-old kids, or just, you know, want to play the I was right first game. Let me acknowledge, like, I was guilty of this in the past. Like, I called Imani Bates the best 15-year-old I'd ever seen. To be honest, he was and still is the best 15-year-old I'd ever seen. But it's not just Imani Bates, Josh Jackson, Marvin Bagley, you know, so many other guys that we thought were absolutely elite, can't miss kids. And it's just not fair. Cooper Flagg was literally compared to NBA Hall of Famers this week. And that is both irresponsible and unfair. So listen, Cooper Flagg is a very talented young man. Cameron Boozer is a very talented young man. Cameron Boozer's Knight Riders elite team, they won the E15 division. So they won that Peach Jam championship. They hammered Maine United, which is Cooper Flagg's team. You couldn't help but have some sympathy watching Cooper Flagg go through that, because this was a day after kind of, I think this was on Thursday. So like the mass media had arrived on Wednesday and they started throwing out all these labels to Cooper Flagg. And then all of a sudden his team's down 18-0 on center court and he's got to adjust to this. So I'm on my soapbox a little bit, but yeah. I just think it's so counterproductive. I think the adults in the room need to just relax. It's okay to say these guys are highly talented, to acknowledge their talent, and still to admit that nothing is a foregone conclusion when we're talking about 15-year-old kids, because that is exactly what they are. They are kids. It doesn't matter how big and strong they are at an early age. They're highly talented kids, and they've got a tremendous long-term opportunity. But, you know, maintaining their humility and work ethic and having good people around them, which both of these kids seem to have right now, so that's just as important as their talent, that is so, so important. And tuning out all the Twitter nonsense is just absolutely critical.
I agree with you entirely. When I went to Peach Jam last year, when the crowds weren't there, as you all know, general public wasn't allowed into that building. I wrote a few things, but one of the things I wrote was about Imani Bates, who frankly was, you know, he was fine, right? He was, the takeaway was Imani Bates is not at the level now that he was projected. I won't say promised, but like projected by everyone to be. And, you know, I think Imani Bates served as the, what should be the last and final reminder. I understand,
it's really, like, but it's not going. I mean, we saw.
I know, but frankly, guys like you, guys like me, if you have a national platform in particular, and sometimes it's not even a national platform. Like, I get it. There's people on the baselines taking highlights, and they're going to share it on social media, and then they need a catchy all caps headline on Twitter or on YouTube to get people to watch it. And it's like KD like skills at 16. Wow, you know, all this crap. We really need to do a conscientious effort and a better job collectively. When I'm talking like even into 17s, yes, you can say this player looks like the best player in his class, but like attaching these labels to players that are 16, 17 years old, to guys who are literally on their way to the Hall of Fame, if not already there, like it needs to permanently stop, because the downside can be so damaging. Not to mention the fact that like the media can and should do its job. We should help tell these stories, but it's almost like, I think you kind of hit on it exactly. Sometimes, be it with writers or talking heads or people that are going on social media, there's almost like this race to see who can give the highest compliments early enough to say like you were in before everyone else, when it shouldn't be about that. And with guys like Cooper Flagg and Boozer, really tantalizing, fun players. They're super young. Let's just let them be like that. We both know we're going to, you know, some of that current's going to tug away anyway. But I think it was important to at least mention it again, because if for whatever reason we look up and Cooper Flagg is like, you know, the ninth best player in his class versus whatever, like, who knows where it's going?
It's not impossible. Like, here's the thing. They're 15 years old. There's some kid who's 6 feet tall, 120 pounds right now, who's going to grow 10 inches in the next 3 years. And we just, and you know what, if that happens and he ends up being better than Cooper Flagg, that's not Cooper Flagg's fault. You know, I mean, that happens all the time. And if you look at the players who are the best in the NBA right now, There's some who popped early. There's LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love and guys like that. But there's also Steph Curry and Dame Lillard and Kawhi Leonard. And players pop or ascend at various points. And, you know, it's just, I have such a hard time, especially at those early ages, with the expectations that we put on these kids, because we treat them like it's a foregone conclusion. And, you know, like this was a common theme we talked about all week. And then somebody said, yeah, turn on the NBA Summer League and look at the list of two-way players. They were all guys who were promised that they were certain pros and millionaires just a couple of years ago. And now they're fighting for, you know, they're fighting for their livelihoods.
Where's Mikey Williams ranked right now, Adam, off the top of your head? Do you know?
I don't know. I admittedly
speaks to it. Speaks to it, though, right? Like Mikey Wilson wasn't necessarily promised to be like, you know, the greatest thing, but yet another one of the, and again, it's not the player's fault. We gotta do a better job at that. As we're on this little soapbox, if you will, give me some of your other floor is yours, my man. And I hope our listeners are really appreciating, frankly, the intel, the opinions, the insight. Because again, Parrish and I, you're not getting this. You might get some funny random stories and digressions that make it entertaining, but I'd rather give you some meat and potatoes to the listenership. So standouts, takeaways from Peach Jam, July in general, like anything you want to hit on right now, lay it on us.
I'd like to, you know, I think winning matters. So I'd want to start with MoCan. You know, MoCan Elite beat Team Takeover by one in the final game. I'm looking up right now because I'm just looking at the box score. Yeah. You know, this is a team that did it with defense. This is like the most, one of the best coach teams year in and year out. Does a tremendous job. They've got a variety of good players. I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of his last name, but Bilal is a five-star forward and, you know, strong body, versatile, inside out, kind of college ready four-man. John Bull is going to go to Sunrise Christian, 7-foot rim protector. Trey Green is a kind of a microwave type volume scoring lead guard. But this is a group that did it by committee, that bought into a team setting and that is coached like a college program. Like you go watch them, they run good stuff. They defend with principles. Guys buy into different roles, and that's refreshing. Team Takeover lost in the finals. How about this stat? Team Takeover has four different rising juniors who play on their EYBL team, okay? And then their 16 and under team won the E16 division. So they basically said, okay, we're going to take our top four young players, not have them play in the E16 division. They still won the E16s, and then the 17s finished second. So if you want an early favorite for the 2023 Peach Jam Championship, it's going to be Team Takeover. So again, I do think that those, you know, winning matters because it speaks to who can buy into the team concept. And a lot of the guys we talked about so far, even on this pod, Gigi Jackson, DJ Wagner, those either didn't make the Peach Jam to begin with or didn't win their pool. And at some point, winning's got to matter. In impacting the game in ways that correlate to winning, that has to matter. So again, I know you said we were off the soapbox, but I slipped back on.
All good.
But I did want to recognize MoCan and Takeover because those were the two programs that won championships. Knight Riders Elite, Cameron Bruiser's program, they won the 15 and under title. So those were the three programs that walked away with championships. And so to me, those are the players that deserve the credit coming out of the week.
MoCan, if I remember correctly, they won it with. Did they not win that with Trae Young and Michael Porter Jr.? Is that the last time?
Absolutely.
They won it?
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously that was a star-studded roster.
Yeah.
This is if I'm not mistaken, this is their third EYBL championship, but this was certainly more of a committee effort than we've seen in the past. I mean, they didn't have anybody score more than 13 points in the final game. They had, let's see here. They had five players who had six or more. You know, they won the game 53-52. They did it with defense, but all week long. In fact, when on this very podcast earlier in the week, I had suggested that I thought MoCan was the favorite just because of how organized, well-coached and disciplined they were collectively.
By the way, Takeover, if you're unfamiliar, is from the greater D.C. area. So as Kevin Willard is trying to continue to get some momentum, in fact, I'm going to mention a couple of recruits here that he's going after. D.C. area Takeover, they are certainly looking to be set up in the years to come to be pretty strong. A lot of really good talent around that. Let me give you a few guys here. So I was in Chicago on Wednesday. You were previously at Under Armour. These are not all elite, highly rated players, but I'm going to give you – We'll go name by name. So I'll give you the name.
Quick hits. I like it. Hit me.
Quick,
what do you got?
Quick hits on. Let's do it this way, Adam.
Quizzing me publicly. What could go wrong? Here we go.
Yeah, you tell me if you think there's a lean, what you think it is, and a quick description of the player's game, all right?
Okay.
These are, and by me even mentioning them, they're just guys who caught my eye when I watched them in Chicago. Under Armour, to be frank, was considered to be vastly inferior this year, particularly to the Peach Jam. That normally is the case, but there was, you know, they still had some guys. I mean, they had like 20 top 150, 170 guys, they told me, at that tournament in Chicago, but it wasn't as strong as it's been. All right, so five guys. My favorite of all of them, El Marco Jackson. He's from Jersey, plays at South Kent in Connecticut. I couldn't help but watch this guy. He was my favorite player I saw play at Under Armour. What's the rundown on him?
Agreed. His recruitment has expanded more in the last month than maybe anybody else. He's transferring from Academy of New Church to South Kent for this past season. Big power guard, listed at 6'4". As you know, as the height expert, he may be 6'3", but he is powerful.
My man, I'm 6'3". He ain't 6'4".
All right. So he's powerful. He's got phenomenal speed. He gets downhill exceptionally well. His recruitment, Maryland was perceived as the leader at the beginning of June. But this is wide open right now because he's a player that has really asserted himself as one of the top point guards in the country. You know, maybe even, you know, behind Isaiah Collier. Is he the second best point guard in the country? It's a fair question. And so I think his recruitment is too wide open to call because it's really exploded in the last month and a half.
Just, for my own benefit and also for listeners, you just mentioned Collier. He's not on my list, but for people trying to keep track, where in the nation, like what part of the country is he from?
He's from Georgia. He's got a meniscus injury he was actually playing through it at the USA Basketball U18 training camp in early June. I was down there. He was playing really well, and it was surprising when he didn't make the cut, and we were trying to figure out why, because they diagnosed he had a meniscus injury. He's been out ever since, but he is the best point guard in the country, plays for the Skill Factory, and was there supporting them this weekend at the Peach Jam, but not in action, obviously.
All right. So El Marco Jackson's recruitment is expanding. Maryland was a perceived favorite. We'll see if Willard, first season on the job, can actually maintain that because I love his game. JP Estrella, the other player, and I hope I'm saying that correctly. He's from Portland, Maine.
Yep.
By the way, I'm going to Portland, Maine to be with Guster on stage in like 3 weeks. So
Portland, Maine is a sleeper cool city, by the way.
Amazing.
It's very cool.
I love the fact that Maine's got like multiple like really awesome players. He's going to play at Brewster Academy. There was a game, Adam, where Jackson was going against Estrella, and it was like a Peach Jam game in terms of coach attendance. Tons of power conference coaches there for both these guys. What do people need to know about Estrella, and has he been a slow ascent, or has he really turned it on, from the spring to now to elevate his standing in the rankings?
So JP Estrella recently measured, I have documentation on this one, 6'10.5". He lists himself at 6'11", 6'10.5". To put that in perspective, he was 6'3" as a high school freshman. So he is a classic late bloomer. He's still filling out, kind of growing into his body. But he was, you know, I named him the top post prospect in Under Armour Association because he's not a finished product. He's got touch that's going to extend outside. So his shot is going to project. He's got terrific hands and both hands inside the lane. He shows flashes of being an elite passer. So the bottom line is he's a late blooming big with inside out ability who really thrives in offensive structure. Now, he got all the blue blood offers in April and June. And he's going through a similar type of process of TJ Power. Like, okay, Duke offered me, but I'm, you know, just judging on how they're recruiting me, I'm not the priority. But then I've got places like Iowa where Fran McCaffrey's at every single game, and he's got a long, long list. So he took a variety of visits before the month. He's maximizing that rule. I think he's going to end up taking like 8 different official visits. So he's really, trying to see what he wants to do. Kansas is in the mix for him as well. And so it's going to be, but again, too close to call. I'm not the crystal ball guy, admittedly, but there is no definitive intel on which way he's leaning, but a skilled inside out late blooming big.
Personal note, a side note here, Estrella plays for Middlesex Magic. And I believe it's the 16s teams. The son of one, Brad Stevens, plays on that team. So Stevens was actually in Chicago, caught up with him, and Brad Stevens remains the best, my man. It was a wonderful conversation. He's just so unassuming, sitting there with his Red Sox hat on. Initially, Adam, as you well know, the Peach Jam is an exception in terms of NBA scouts were there, like, through, I guess, Saturday or whatever. That wasn't the case with the Under Armour deal. Now, scouts could go to a different Under Armour events, but at first I thought Stevens was there because NBA scouts could be in the building. No, his son plays for the team.
So what you just alluded to is considered one of the biggest competitive advantages in all of grassroots basketball, is that the Nike Peach Jam is certified for NBA scouts, but the Under Armour Association and the Adidas 3SSB circuit are not. I don't know why that's the case, but that is in fact the case.
Yeah, and obviously it is a major competitive advantage, and we'll see if that changes next year or not. Okay, three more players. Kerry Booth, I saw him play with you in the same gym in June in Connecticut, and then he was up in Chicago. He is the son of Calvin Booth, who is now the former NBA player. He's now the GM of the Denver Nuggets. Real quick comment for me on this one, Adam. Coaches I've talked to are split on Kerry in terms of how high he should be considered in his class. I will say, when I saw him in the scholastic setting, June stuff, just so our listeners are clear, July was grassroots, and June was more if you play with your prep school team, the competition isn't as high. But some coaches actually prefer that setting because of the kind of basketball that's played. They actually think it's a truer scout. You know, your mileage may vary depending on the kind of coach you are. But overall, Kerry Booth, I actually got some split feedback on. Where do you land with him, and where does he fall overall in the rankings right now, so people can kind of get an understanding? Because he certainly got some buzz to his
career. he was the third best big man on my Under Armour Association board. So I went there in Atlanta week one, and then after that I came back, went through my notes and the film, kind of broke down some highlights. They're on Twitter right now because I tweeted out some highlights of each guy. Kerry Booth is not a finished product. He talked about how JP Estrella is still growing into his body. Ironically, those guys are going to be teammates next year at Brewster Academy. Neither one elected to reclassify. For Kerry Booth, that course of action might have made more sense because he is not as far along physically. He's got to keep filling out. The reason for the intrigue is the overlap of size and skill. Obviously, he comes from good genes. But, you know, with his front court size and his ability to stretch the floor, he shows some glimpses of athleticism when he's in open space, but doesn't yet have a strong enough body to play through contact. And the other thing with Kerry Booth is he is as high of an has as high of a basketball intellect as you would expect for a GM son. He's a very smart player in the front court. So just like Estrella, you can run offense with him. Kerry Booth, not a finished product. His best days are ahead of him. If you're deciding who the best player is right now, you're going to be lower on him. If you're deciding who the best prospect is long-term, which is what I think evaluators and college coaches are doing, you are going to be higher on his long-term projection.
So because his projection is longer, like, we could have a situation where maybe would his pool of programs recruiting him, could that expand even more in your opinion?
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't like, he's not a one and done candidate in my mind. He needs you know, time to grow out, to fill out, pardon me, to grow and fill out. He's got a little hitch in the way he shoots, even though he makes threes, you know, even his gait when he's running the floor, that could be more fluid. He's just a guy who needs time. And that's not, you know, for big kids, that's pretty normal.
I'm going to go a player outside the top 102.47 sports rankings. I couldn't help but notice him. He'll also feature into a story that I'm going to have for later this week. But we are one out of Pennsylvania, Thomas Hawk.
Got it.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And the best part about this is the way he spells his name, H-A-U-G-H, and he pronounces it like the bird, like Hawk.
Hawk. It's Thomas Hawk, but it's H-A-U-G-H. He seems, I'm trying to give a little highlights to guys who stood out to me. He's one who clearly stood out to me, a lot of potential. And frankly, I say this, but he just seems underrated. Like, he's literally underrated. I don't know where he's just not.
I will take, if he is, that's on me. And I'll say this. And obviously he's committed to Florida. He's a guy that could have gone in 2022 because he graduated. He's electing to go back and do a post-grad year. 2 years ago, he was 6'7". He has now been measured at 6'10". That is super relevant because with the way he moves at 6'10", now you're talking about a potentially highly versatile front court defender. And he's not a guy who's going to go out and get you 20 consistently. In fact, I saw him play 5 high school games this season. He didn't have double figures in any of the 5 games, literally. His high school coach and I were literally laughing about the fact that, you know, his high school coach said to me, he said, Florida, you were probably going nuts. He sucked every time you saw him play. So it was, but kept growing, maintained his mobility at every stretch. He plays the right way. He is a guy who impacts winning. He's a Marco Jackson's teammate. He's content to move the ball. He can finish around the rim. He's got shooting potential. And you're talking about a super versatile front court defender. So if he hits, and that's the kind of term that we don't often use in high school, even though we should, if he hits, he could hit big, because you're talking about a 6'10 front court guy who knows how to play, who moves the ball, who has some shooting potential to develop, and is going to be able to be switchable defensively. And that's a prototype that does pan out long term. So not going to be the type of loud stat stuffing performance that gets you all the accolades in high school or AAU, but has markers that translate to potential success in the future.
Last player out of the greater Baltimore area, I guess maybe might be a Maryland lean here. He's a big, maybe 6'10", Derek Queen. I believe he's going to be at Montverde down in Florida for this upcoming season. It seems like still something of a project, but you know, you couldn't help but notice him. At least I couldn't when I watched him play. How much development is there still to go versus finished product? Having said that, like, you can clearly see there's like development to go. What's the rundown on him? And do you think he'll eventually be a Terrapin?
Well, he's a 24. So he's got 2 years left of high school. And he was a guy who was recognized at a really early age. In fact, he was number one in the country as a sophomore. At the tail end of his freshman year. So he was in COVID. I remember there was the first NIBC event at St. James in Virginia. He was there, and it was like the only game we were able to see live. And the freshman was dominating and really, you know, just jumping into people's field of vision in terms of a really intriguing long-term prospect, in the same way Cooper Flagg and Cameron Boozer did this past week. Transferred to Montverde, had some growing pains this past year, but he's still got 2 more years. He's older for 2024, so it is possible you see him go up to 23 and kind of follow that GG Jackson path. That's not, you know, I don't have that on any authority. I'm just saying based on his age, that's a possibility. He's a finesse big. He's highly skilled. He has got phenomenal hands. I mean, this, it doesn't matter where you throw it, he catches it. And that also makes him an elite rebounder. He's a passer. He's got really good footwork. I'd like to see that that touch start to develop into a little bit more floor spacing. We haven't seen that as much as I thought. And he's got to continue to work on his conditioning. He's made really good strides in the last year, but it's a work in progress. And as I said, just a rising junior at this point in time.
Adam, I barely know what to say here. This has been such a productive, free-flowing conversation with no long asides, no talk about camel fighting, Dodo birds, Leaky Black.
Is that how you guys usually roll?
You really never know. Last year when we did this,
I hit the plus 15 cycle on the tab and I hear Dodo birds. I'm like, yep, plus skip 15.
You might not be the only one, my man. Last year, Paris spent about 20 minutes of this podcast absolutely slandering Jalen Duren. Now that somewhat aged well, because he said he's never gonna be the number one pick in the draft, but there was none of that on this year's edition. Before we get out of here, for those people that do care about the rankings, and let's just focus on 23, what is our timeline on when 247 will refresh and we'll get a new arrangement, a new echelon, if you will, on where those guys stand?
So I don't think there has been a definitive date established just yet, but it's certainly in the coming weeks, because we have, you know, the recruiting period is over now. Everybody's shutting it down. For me, that means, just because I'm kind of a basketball nerd, I'm going to go back and watch all the film. And as I said, try and dive into whatever I missed. But I think certainly in the coming weeks, you will see an updated rankings that will be potentially brand new, and obviously have a new number one now that GG Jackson is in the class of 2022.
GG Jackson is in the class of 2022. He will be playing college basketball at South Carolina. Lamont Paris got himself a high profile commit. We'll see how that works. Adam Finkelstein is the director of scouting. He is our top dog here at 247 Sports. We are thrilled to have him. If you watch the YouTube channel, by the way, please do subscribe. But you have seen him on there plenty. Him and Mr. David Cobb have been doing plenty of stuff, and he was all over the NBA draft as well. It's been a pleasure having you. On a personal note, I will have stuff tied to this past week. I was on an assignment that I'm eager to share and talk about. That'll go on the site later this week, either Tuesday or Wednesday. So we'll save it for that. We will also still continue to have our summer shoot-around series. We got two more schools coming this week as well, so you can be on the lookout for those in the feed. As is Adam, I appreciate you coming on, and to be transparent, your patience with the self stuff, which was emanating. And
you got to break news. You got to break news. I appreciate you having me. It was good seeing you this week at the Peach.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for listening. Please do subscribe if you have not already. GP will be on the next episode with yours truly. Until then, we will talk to you soon. And thanks for tuning in.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.